News more twisted than soap operas.
Ugh.
And with worse actors.
You can't be serious.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Mind Medicine Program in association with Mind Medicine Australia. The second part of our two-hour fortnightly program, co-hosted by me, Charles Coves, and Tanya de Jong AM, who can't be with us today due to other wonderful excitement that she has. We're on at 1 p.m. Melbourne time till 3 p.m., which happens to be 6 p.m. in Los Angeles. So welcome to all you commuters stuck. Actually, it's now 7 p.m. in Los Angeles, so I hope you're listening. And if you're on a podcast, well, we don't know when you are listening. Now, I'm Charles Coves, Australasia's passion provocateur. I was a lawyer for many years. I've been a professional speaker for 28 years, executive coach, and author of two books, Passionate People Produce and Passionate Performance. This show is all about how and why mind matters. It is about insights into mental health issues and health issues of all descriptions. And our guest this hour is going to be talking about health issues of all descriptions. Mind Medicine Australia, we're delighted to be supporting the mental health charity, Mind Medicine Australia. And in the first hour, I went through a description of psilocybin and MDMA as psychedelic drugs and medically assisted psychedelic drugs. And I want to tell you a little bit more about these programs because, dear listeners, these are crucial therapies. So let me continue with some more information about MMA's work. It's commenced the first ever certificate in psychedelic therapies in the Southern Hemisphere. There's a world-class faculty, which includes Dr. Gábor Maté from Canada. Notice I say that his name beautifully, not Gábor Mate, because he's actually a Hungarian, see, so I know how to pronounce M-A-T-E. Professor David Nutt from the UK, Dr. Rick Doblin, and many others in training psychiatrists, GPs, physicians, and other specialists, nurses, psychologists, psychotherapists, social workers, and occupational therapists. This program was recently described as the world's best psychedelic therapist training program by Professor David Nutt. And graduates are raving about the program. Recently, Australia's TGA, the equivalent of the FDA in the US, has started granting approvals through an SASB, which is a special approvals system for psilocybin and MDMA-assisted therapies for patients on a case-by-case basis, and is considering rescheduling applications for these two powerful, wonderful drugs from Schedule 9 down to Schedule 8 to make it a controlled medicine. Over the last 3 years, Mind Medicine Australia has built awareness by presenting to governments, regulators, politicians, medical professionals. Dear listeners, there are plenty of medical professionals who push back against any psychedelics, and also to members of the public, provided free access to leading researchers from around the world through a regular global webinar and podcast series, launched Australia's first book of psychedelic healing stories, organised a major international summit with leading researchers and practitioners, developed a leading therapist training course that I've already mentioned, and additional professional development programs, collaborated on the establishment of a Centre of Excellence in Psychedelic Assisted Therapies, the Neuromedicines Discovery Centre at Monash University in Victoria, Australia, the first in Australia, successfully lobbied the federal government to provide $15 million of grants for psychedelic research, developed a campaign to have these medicines rescheduled, secured medicine supplies, and announced the largest psychedelic-assisted therapy trial in Australia. The recent pandemic has exacerbated Australia's mental health epidemic, and these treatments have the potential to cure millions of people who are suffering. And I'll be asking our guest about psychedelic drugs. I haven't warned him about that, but when I introduce him, he'll have plenty of time to think about that question. But of course, there's also medicinal cannabis, and I'm CEO of an industrial hemp company, and hemp is cannabis. And medicinal cannabis is such a wonderful, wonderful tool in the toolbox. I'll also be talking about that. Now, passion. The reason why I'm so passionate about passion is because it's a crucial element in mental health. And I say to you that when you are pursuing your passion, you will have far less mental health problems. I will guarantee that to you. I'll happily take that on with anyone. Anyone who's suffering from mental health, check whether you or not you are pursuing your passion. And we talk about much more. And what I love about TNT Radio is that this program is about searching for truth, and it's not limited by political correctness or the cancel culture. Now, my guest this hour, I'm looking forward to this conversation. Many people tell me that this guest is a hero to them. He is Professor Ian Brighthope, who also lives in Melbourne. I have known him for some years. If I went through his resume, we would run out of time. We'd be on the top of the hour and I'd have to go away without asking him a question. So I'm not going to go through his resume. Safe to say that he qualified as a doctor. He's now Professor Ian Brighthope. He is a holistic, practical doctor. And Ian Brighthope, I welcome you to the Mind Medicine program on TNT Radio.
Thank you very much, Charles. That was a lovely introduction. And if you don't mind me saying to our American friends, our US friends, g'day, mate.
G'day, mate. G'day, beautifully mate. Put. Beautifully put. And the one thing I forgot to say, which I said at the top of the hour, is listening to the FSN News, which is great, at the top of the hour, go, hey, this is a lovely global review. Don't panic about Russia and Ukraine. You can only deserve to panic if you've searched the information about lots of sources, which is like health, isn't it, Ian? But this the mainstream media, if that's your sole information about the Ukraine and Russia, then you are sadly misinformed.
Precisely. And we've been sadly misinformed about so many things, especially about health and medicine and essentially the environment, which I'm very passionate about. And I think the misinformation about the pandemic is a classical go down as a classical story for our future generations, that it's been extremely badly managed from the World Health Organization all the way through to the local doctor. And unfortunately, it's resulted in a lot of pain and it was called by our Prime Minister here a threat, and we needed to fight it. We're at war. Well, the body is never at war. The body can handle these things very well because we have evolved with these viruses. So I love your passion, the introduction with your passion. Charles, I'm coming back to passion. Every now and again, I take some passion, some passion flower. It's another one of those wonderful herbs or plants that has a profound effect on not only our mind and our nervous system, but also our immune system. So passion is everywhere, should be everywhere, and we need a lot more of it.
Now, what was that flower? Because the line just broke, as you said, the passion flower?
I'm sorry, it's passion flower. It's the flower from the passion fruit, and it contains some very, very powerful compounds that, like all plants that we've evolved with, have chemicals in them, natural occurring chemicals that have an effect on our body, our mind, and our spirit.
Wow. See the benefit of being a host of a radio program, you find out all this wonderful information. Now, I really wanted you to take this opportunity to tell us about your journey that has led to you in this room now, because you've had an amazing journey. I do want you to cover your pushback against medical regulation in this country. Crucial element, because I want you to inspire health professionals around the world to have the same attitude that you did. So tell us about your past.
Well, I would like to inspire all people to be health professionals from the time they're babies all the way through to old age and death, that everybody should become a health fiend, a health professional. Everybody should be involved in their own health as well as helping others as well. My journey started a long, long time ago, probably with my grandparents, who were the first to introduce garlic into one of the top hotels here in Melbourne when they immigrated from Europe. So I appreciated a whole range of natural things from my early years as a kid. We used to get cod liver oil to help us prevent colds and flus and so forth every winter. So it was natural for us to be looked after in a natural way. And when I studied agricultural science, I learned about crops and pastures and the health of soils and the importance of trace elements in soils, all the way through to trace elements in the prevention of cancer and heart disease, and many other aspects of the health of soils through to the health of the mind. We used to call it from soil to psyche, if you like, that there is a whole line of lineage of important molecules from the soil all the way through to our soma and our psyche, our body and our mind. And when I was studying agricultural science, I didn't realise that that would come in handy when I actually studied medicine. And during my study of medicine, I was very intrigued with the basic sciences, the physics, the chemistry, biology, and all these other sciences. But when it came to actually helping patients, I was devastated. In our clinic, first clinical year, I was told that there is a cancer in the bed across the ward. Not a patient, but a cancer, or a hernia, or an appendix, or, you know, enlarged glands. You know, this was the way people were referred to, you know. And it was incredible that they were not treated as human beings. And one particular ward round, the professor said to me, after I asked about an elderly lady who'd been operated on for cancer, and she was getting salt and sugar into her veins and jelly and ice cream for her dinner, I asked about her state of nutrition and something should be done about it because she looked like she was wasting away. And if she'd been an animal, I would have been force feeding her with, you know, high protein, nutrient dense foods. And he looked at me and he said, "We're not interested in this woman's state of nutrition, doctor. We're treating a cancer. That's what we're here for." And I said to myself, "I will never be a doctor like you, sir." And I said it to my colleagues as well later. And they wondered what I was talking about. But, you know, my background, I was fortunate. I was privileged. I was lucky in some respects to have had another form of education that led me into describing myself as going to be a different sort of doctor. And certainly, when I graduated, I travelled around the world looking at health systems, looking at natural things, and came back and I set up with a couple of other doctors, a College of Nutritional and Environmental Medicine. And that was in, around about 1980, 82. It's over 40 years old now. And it's still training doctors to think and act in terms of health and not in terms of disease and drug. So, unfortunately, you get into trouble when you're a doctor who thinks a little bit outside the square. If you're not prescribing a drug every 13 minutes, then you're not keeping the wheels of industry turning over. That's the way I look at it now. So in my early days, I decided to set up a clinic where I would give, in fact, I learned from the late Linus Pauling, who was a Nobel Prize laureate. He won two independent Nobel Prizes, one in science and one in chemistry and one in peace, very well known for vitamin C. I started giving high doses of intravenous vitamin C a long, long time ago, back in the late 1970s, early 1980s, and discovered that it was very, very effective in acute viral infections, severe flus, severe colds, severe herpes zoster, shingles, cold sores, glandular fever, infectious mononucleosis, bacterial infection, you know, discovery after discovery after discovery. And cancer patients would come along and say, "Look, I've got an infection." You know, these people would feel better, even though they've got cancer, after you've given them high-dose intravenous vitamin C. So that took me to another journey when the advent of the HIV-AIDS virus occurred in the early 1980s. Patients with HIV and full-blown AIDS would come along for treatment, natural treatments, and they heard that their friends and colleagues who had had serious infections such as pneumocystis pneumonia and or herpes or shingles, any infection, but the one that was taking them out most commonly was pneumonia, the pneumocystis. And strangely enough, the pneumocystis was responding to the high-dose intravenous vitamin C. So I thought, well, we've discovered something here. my clinic, the doctors working with me, we're actually curing people of incurable diseases. Unbelievable. You know, in fact, they would discharge, the patients would discharge themselves from the hospital, come to the clinic, have their intravenous vitamin C and go back to hospital. And the hospital doctors were surprised at the responses that we were getting. In fact, they wanted to do a clinical study with us to determine whether or not, you know, our patients were doing better than theirs, because they knew that worked. Anyway, as a consequence of the success with the patients, I was encouraged to write a chapter in a book. In fact, the chapter was on immunology, nutritional immunology, because of my nutritional medicine interests. And nutritional immunology is basically nutrients for the immune system. That book turned out to be a book titled The AIDS Fighters. It was published in Australia, the States, Japan, and elsewhere. And it got me into a lot of trouble. I thought I was doing a service to the community, but it got me into so much trouble that the authorities in Australia wanted to strike me off as a doctor and finish my career in my early, very, very early days. And mind, this is 40 years ago now. Well, nearly 40 years ago. Well, the successes we were getting with HIV/AIDS were unbelievable, but I was stopped. I ended up before the medical boards, serious charges of infamous conduct in a professional respect, which is the worst charge you can get as a doctor. Those charges apply to doctors who kill patients and sexually molest females and children and this sort of thing. Unbelievable, heinous crime. Anyway, I had a very good lawyer and barrister and Queen's Counsel that saw me through that case, and an appeal to the Supreme Court here in Victoria cleared my name. The medical board was chastised and criticised by the Justice Gobbo at the time. And so the medical board pulled its head in and left me alone for decades as a consequence of that, because that was very embarrassing for them. It gave me the opportunity to run the college and train other doctors for 30 plus years, and I'm still doing it now, helping train doctors to manage the current epidemic. Every epidemic since then, including SARS and swine flu and other serious viral epidemics, we manage patients with high-dose intravenous vitamin C and other nutrients important in the immune system. Managing very, very easily. You can actually prevent these infections with high doses of vitamin D and not even necessarily have to go to a doctor. So at the beginning of this current pandemic, after knowing we can actually save people's lives with high dose intravenous vitamin C, we can actually get people off ventilators, we can actually prevent them going onto ventilators. Study we did recently in Turkey, in six centres in Turkey, university-based hospital centres, showed that if you've got high levels of vitamin D, you don't get sick and end up going into hospital with COVID. If you've got intermediate levels, you can get sick with COVID, but not necessarily end up in hospital. If you've got low levels, you can get sick and end up in hospital. And if you've got deficient levels, you can end up getting very sick, going into hospital and dying in intensive care. It's quite simple, you know. Vitamin D, the sunlight vitamin, raises your antibody levels. It raises your ability to fight off the cytokine storm. It stops you getting the lung conditions and your lungs going to acute lung failure, acute lung injury. It stops you getting septicemia. It stops all of the mechanisms of pathology that cause you to die from COVID. It is an absolute godsend that nature provides us with this most powerful molecule to defend us against COVID. And vitamin C, vitamin D, and mineral zinc together create a lining of your mucous membranes called mucus that is toxic to the virus and stops the virus even penetrating into your cells. Now, if you've got the right levels of these things in your system, you'll just shake off the coronaviruses of all types. You shake off the hot, common cold viruses. You'll shake off the gastrointestinal viruses, and you will even shake off the severe influenza viruses as well. You know, we've known about vitamin D and sunlight for centuries. I mean, you put people with TB and serious flu-like illnesses out into the sunshine back in the good old days. It wasn't the sunshine that did it. It was the light shining on your skin producing the vitamin D and producing that most powerful molecule. So that takes us to the current situation that we're in now, where the authorities have failed to manage this virus. They have failed the whole world. It's the World Health Organization's fault and the advisors to the World Health Organization and those who are benefiting from the sale of vaccines and delaying early treatment, delaying prevention for 16 to 18 months and allowing the virus to continue in the community, to continue producing variants, continue to spread, continue to kill. And the incompetence and negligence and criminality attached to this pandemic is going to be an historical milestone in the failure of humanity to recognize the power of nature. We are so arrogant that we believe our drugs and our vaccines can make us healthy. We just have not realized the power of nature. And we command nature, as Francis Bacon said, we command nature only by obeying her. Well, she and God provided us with the right molecules to keep us healthy, which is a word that just doesn't exist in the lexicon of the current medical practice. Medicine is designed for doctors to think and act in terms of disease and prescribe drug after drug after drug after drug, making sick people sicker and sicker and sicker, and the environment sicker and sicker and sicker. So we need to do I'm going on and on and on, Charles, but you asked me about the journey.
No, that was compelling radio, and you did precisely what I was wanting you to do, which was to express your view about the journey that the planet has, the journey that you have been on that led to your credibility in calling out the criminal, corrupt, dishonest behavior of regulators and politicians in what we've gone through. Dear listeners, you're listening to the Mind Medicine program. With me, your host, Charles Kerbess. I'm with Professor Ian Brighthope on TNT Radio, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
G'day, Fast Ed here. As a chef, you know what I hear a lot? Wow, that smells really good. Is it done yet? For certain foods, it's important they cook properly rather than how they look or smell. Those foods include hamburgers, sausages, chicken, and leftovers. The rule of thumb's pretty simple. Cook those foods to 75 degrees Celsius. And listen, I'm no Einstein, so I use a food thermometer, and I reckon you should too. That way, you'll know it's done without guessing, and no one will get sick.
A message from the Food Safety Information Council.
Carbon monoxide is a colorless, odorless gas that can be fatal. Don't use anything indoors that burns fuel, such as gasoline-powered generators, camp stoves and lanterns, or charcoal grills. Opening doors and windows or using fans isn't enough. Have your vents and chimneys checked to make sure water heater and gas furnace exhausts aren't blocked. If you feel sick, dizzy, or weak while using a generator, get to fresh air right away. From the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency.
Every 2 minutes, an American is sexually assaulted. The majority of victims know their attacker. It could be your friend, your neighbor, or someone you met at a party. If you said no, it's rape, and it's a crime. This is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Call the National Sexual Assault Hotline today at 1-800-656-HOPE or visit RAIN.org. That's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Many dogs and cats spend endless days indoors staring at the wall, living for the moment when you will come home and tell them you love them, take them out, and make a fuss over them. Dogs and cats need physical exercise and mental stimulation, things to do and think about in order to be healthy and happy. Please set time aside for them and give them a real life and real love. For more information, please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals at 757-622-PETA. Or helpinganimals.com. That's helpinganimals.com.
Instead of putting a cracker under a politician, why not some TNT? Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I love it. Don't put a cracker under a politician. Give them a link to tntradio.live. Welcome back to the Mind Medicine Program with your host, Charles Coves, Australasia's passion provocateur. And our guest this hour is Professor Ian Brighthope, a doctor, former not practicing as a doctor, as a nutritional integrative health expert. And what he shared with us in the first part of the program was most compelling. I want to come back to this question of the medical regulators, Ian, because they attacked you. They were criticized. And I put to you that the medical regulators in the Western world are not acting honestly. What are your views on that?
That's precisely the situation, Charles. The medical regulators make sure that doctors are practicing medicine and not good healthcare. And there's a big difference between medicine and good healthcare. Medicine is actually the treatment of disease with drugs, surgery, and radiotherapy. And that's what doctors are trained to think and act in terms of. But when a doctor starts making people healthy and or tries to reverse a disease, for example, you can reverse cardiovascular disease with diet and exercise and certain supplements. You can actually prevent certain diseases from progressing, including autoimmune diseases and some cancers. So there are ways of making people healthier. But if you start doing this as a doctor, then you are likely to be complained about by one of your colleagues or by a patient's relatives who don't like what you're doing for the patient. Now, that may seem strange, but that's what happens. So as soon as a doctor who's doing nutritional medicine, complementary medicine, integrative medicine, herbal medicine, lifestyle changes or meditation, then they become suspect. They become individuals who are no longer part of the system, who are no longer part of the mechanism producing income for the big pharmaceutical companies. You become outside of that. And therefore, you're not helping the industry, and you don't become part of their business model any longer because you are dangerous. You know, drug companies need disease to survive, and they actually make up diseases in some respects, especially mental diseases. So that the more mental diseases we have, the more drugs and chemicals they can put into people, and you know that's a fantastic business model, and so is this current business model of using genetic material to change people's genetic profiles so that we actually end up with more and different diseases. But that's another story. So if you become different, you become suspect. And of course, you'll be investigated. You'll be asked very nicely by the medical authorities to supply them with information about certain patients. As soon as you do that and supply them with your medical records, they see in your medical records opportunities to attack and ask further questions and dig further and further and further. And sooner or later, they will make up their minds about your management of that patient. And usually, the usual thing is your records aren't adequate, which is very, very strange, or your records are telling us that you're not treating patients according to protocol. And if you're not doing that, then you are become a danger to the public. And if you're a danger to the public, then you must be removed from the medical register or warned about it. Now, back in the days when I was attacked by the medical board, the regulations around the boards were a little less stringent and rigid and penalising than what they are today. But today, if a doctor is suspected of doing something that is poor judgment, for example, poor record keeping, or prescribing, for example, ivermectin in Australia for COVID, or even writing an exemption so that a patient doesn't have to have a vaccine for COVID, then automatically, virtually, that doctor is suspended from practice and can no longer practice. So this is the power that the medical boards have now got. And APRA, the Australian Health Practitioners Regulatory Authority, is draconian. It is a star chamber. It is like something you could never believe would exist in a democracy, where you've got individuals who do not have any idea about what the doctors are doing, but these doctors are making judgments about their colleagues who are prescribing diets and herbal medicines and meditation and so forth for patients. They are rigid in their thinking, and in fact, these doctors are extremely dangerous, and they follow the lead. They follow the leaders in medicine. In my opinion, most of them are funded directly or indirectly by industry, and they benefit from their relationship with industry, and they do not take the interest of the patient at heart. And I can say that quite categorically now, because I've had so much experience in the last 40 plus years, nearly 50 years.
Now, I've had it put to me by people from the United States that the fastest way that we could have stopped this pandemic and the nonsense that we've gone through, which I consider to be a nonsense, but a majority of Australians clearly don't think was a nonsense. I've had it put to me that this corona pandemic could have been stopped if just a few thousand doctors had said, this is a nonsense, we refuse to abide by these protocols that are preventing us from treating patients with vitamin C, D, zinc, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine in the case. But most doctors are terrified of speaking up.
They are terrified because what I said before, they will get struck off. But this is really not a serious pandemic. You know, a serious pandemic kills huge percentages of people very, very quickly. This is a virus that's been built up to be everybody's to be afraid of. But we had early treatments and we had means of prevention. But the medical authorities have been so propagandized with regard to fear-mongering and making the doctors frightened that the doctors are so fearful of even now reporting side effects of the vaccines. So the reporting and recording of the side effects of the vaccines and the deaths that are occurring as a result, they're being put down as a heart attack or acute kidney failure or acute lung failure or a stroke. They're not putting down the cause of the death. So we've got probably 1% to 5% of the deaths that are reported and recorded numbers.
Just one sec. 1% to 5% are being recorded. That's your, because I've seen Harvard study that suggests 1%, but your view is about between 1% and 5% only.
Well, I'm being very generous because the vaccine could be the direct cause or the indirect cause. If it hadn't been the vaccine as an indirect cause, the person may not have died, but they've still got their so-called comorbidities. But, you know, if you've got 2.6 comorbidities and you are vaccinated, you've got a greater chance of dying. You've got an even greater chance of dying if you've got 6 comorbidities. So if there is a side effect of the vaccine, and especially if there's a vascular component to your disease profiles. The problem with the doctors is that stepping out and doing something a little different is not characteristic of the personality of a person who goes into medicine. They are sheep, in effect. And it's the way they're selected into medicine. It's the way they're trained. And it was known a long time ago, in the 1930s, when the big money came into pharmaceuticals and into medical training, that the doctors would be trained to think and act in terms of disease and prescribing drugs and chemicals that had patents attached to them. There's no doubt about that. And, I mean, the leaders in medicine have all been bought off, directly or indirectly. They've been bought off. And the politicians in health are also bought off. You know, I know for a fact that the health ministers in this country are all wooed and are all very much groomed by the pharmaceutical industry to take their pharmaceuticals more seriously than what they should in a really proper healthcare system, which we don't have. It's a disease care system. And one of our health ministers said this a long time ago. Tony Abbott said to me, Ian, I'm not really a minister for health. I'm a minister for disease and sickness. And, you know, we really need another health, another department that's looking after people's health and keep them separate so that there is a competition between the two departments. You know,
That's a beautiful description. That's a beautiful description. It goes into my next question. What is your, I have a definition of health, which I'll share with you in a moment. What is your definition of health? Because I check this with many people. Most people have no idea. They say health is, well, I have no discernible disease, so I'm healthy. What is your definition of health?
My definition of health is the optimum feeling of wellness, physical, mental, spiritual, economical, social, national, and the freedom from fear, the freedom of the individual to pursue their own happiness, and most important, of course, the nourishment of what you inherited to ensure that you maintain that high level of optimal wellness. And when I say the nourishment of what you inherited, we know very clearly that the genes we inherit, they may be disease genes for heart disease or stroke or diabetes or arthritis or inflammatory disorders. We all inherit these genes. But if we feed them properly, it's probably part of the epigenetic science of feeding our genes with the right nutrients so that they express themselves in a way where disease is almost impossible to occur. Okay?
It's like our body needs a good metaphor. Give me the metaphor. The body, from what you just said, the body needs the building blocks to be able to build its defenses.
That's correct. I mean, we know that, for example, our DNA breaks down every now and again. We've got enzymes called DNA repairase. These enzymes require cofactors, simple cofactors like zinc and selenium. And if they don't have zinc and selenium, then the repairs aren't done properly. We can actually downregulate and upregulate it with genes with certain nutrients. Like we can use methylating compounds, for example, a thing called SAMEs, S-adenosyl methionine. We can methylate our genes and either upregulate or downregulate some of our cancer genes or our genes that are responsible for inflammation. Or the genes that are responsible for cancer. You know, we need more research in this area, Charles. We know that the sulfur-containing compounds in garlic and onions have a protective effect against certain toxins on our genetic material. You know, the flavonoids and the carotenoids in our food supply have a profound effect in protecting us against radical damage, free radical damage to our cells and our genes. You know, we know what a reasonably good diet consists of. We know what the best diet will consist of. And the best diet is the diet that's individualized for the person, you know, so that we get the right molecules from our environment to make the genes that we inherit function optimally and give us that optimum level of wellness.
Beautiful.
That
is beautiful, Ian, because I'm going to ask you a question there, because we're on a tight time frame, and I know the questions I ask you have got big answers, so I have to limit you just a little bit, but I don't want to. My definition of health comes from the Hungarian word for health, which is egészség, and I speak Hungarian fluently with both parents coming from Hungary. And the Hungarian language, Ian, is very precise. So many of the world's best mathematicians are Hungarians, and also other mathematicians learn Hungarians because of the precision of its language. And the word for health, egészség, literally means wholeness, being whole, whole, with the W, not without it. And so my definition of health, similar to yours, is health is the unique, and you just touched on it, the unique optimum balance of mental, physical, and spiritual elements. That's my definition. And so to just look on the drug model is crazy. Now, can I turn your attention to two questions? One, What makes something a vitamin? You talked about vitamin C and vitamin D, and I've been a big fan of Linus Pauling since the 60s. What is, quote, a vitamin, if there's a useful way to picture a vitamin? I mean, I look at it as something healthy, but anyway. Secondly, can you touch on the value of medicinal cannabis?
Sure, Charles. Look, the word vitamin is almost obsolete in my book. The word vitamin means an amine that's vital for life. And if it's not supplied by the external environment, then we will die as a consequence of a vitamin deficiency. Now, if we don't have vitamin C in our diet, we end up with a disease called scurvy, where it was, of course, discovered at sea that sailors died from scurvy because they didn't get any fresh limes, lemons and oranges and this sort of thing, citrus. And you only require a very small amount to prevent scurvy. Scurvy, of course, is bruising and bleeding easily, bleeding from the gums, wounds opening up, and then finally dying from an overwhelming infection. Well, the lack of vitamin B3, for example, produces a disease that causes the four Ds, diarrhea, dementia, dermatitis, and death. And that particular disease occurs in diets that miss out on whole grains and foods that contain high levels of vitamin B3. And that's called pellagra. There's a whole range of diseases that occur if we don't get these vitamins. B complex vitamins, vitamin C, vitamin D is a sunlight vitamin. Vitamin E is a complex of vitamins from oils, plant oils, and they are called tocotrienols and tocopherols. And they help to protect our cells against damage from free radicals. A vitamin E deficiency is pretty rare. But these individual molecules, I think we need to start describing them as important components to the biochemical pathways in our body. And by understanding these biochemical pathways, we start to understand why we need these in different doses and different times for different purposes. And so I'll give you an example. Vitamin C is not a vitamin. It is an acid. It's ascorbic acid. So it's not an amine. It's not like thiamine, vitamin B1, that prevents you from getting beriberi and heart failure. It is an acid, an organic acid, that has, and another term I don't like, is antioxidant. I mean, the best antioxidant we can take is something called cyanide. It just stops oxidation completely. Okay. Vitamin C is a prooxidant. Sorry, it's a redox reagent. It actually reduces and oxidizes, which means basically it's taking electrons, negative charged particles in our cells that are unpaired, taking it from doing and stopping it from doing damage, because these electrons are very high energy particles and they can do a lot of damage to our body's cells and nucleus and DNA. It takes these free electrons and dumps them somewhere. So in that process, they are becoming an oxidant and a reductant. They're an oxidizing agent and a reducing agent. So they're redox reagent. So they're sort of balancing things. They take an electron, pass it on, and dump it, and possibly dump it down into the sump where vitamin E is, you know, and then it's not active any longer. So, you know, it's the most powerful redox reagent that we can use for our systems. We as humans don't produce it. We need it from external sources. And sure, fruits and vegetables will supply it, but if we get very sick with a virus or a bacteria, for example, then we need a lot more, and we need it sometimes in big doses and sometimes by injection to get us out of a ventilator, out of intensive care, because that's what's happening. We're dying from lung disease and heart disease, and we're dying on a ventilator with all that oxygen going into our system. We're dying from oxidation. So we need a redox reagent to take those electrons, bring them out, and get you off the ventilator as quickly as possible. You shouldn't even go into hospital if you know what you're doing. So that's vitamin C, ascorbic acid, not a vitamin, and not really a damaging acid. It's only an acid because it's not anything else. It's an organic acid that takes electrons, neutralizes them, and dumps them somewhere where they're harmless.
Beautiful. But that's a love. I love that. I love that model. I come back to medicinal cannabis.
Medicinal cannabis. So medicinal cannabis is something that was introduced to me by a very good friend. He lives in the US and he's married to a very famous Australian singer. I won't mention names and don't like dropping names, but he has been growing his own cannabis for a long time. He saved his wife's life to something, to I think basically using medicinal cannabis. My interest in that has grown more and more. Let me put it this way, Charles. If back 40 years ago I was allowed to use medicinal cannabis as a doctor, I would have been a much better doctor. Nice. I would have given away dozens of drugs that, I never used drugs anyway, but in the early days, yes. I wouldn't have needed antihypertensives. I wouldn't have needed any asthma drugs. I wouldn't have needed painkillers. I wouldn't have needed anti-inflammatory drugs. You know, all right across the board, I wouldn't have needed drugs for migraine. I wouldn't have needed drugs for irritable bowel. I wouldn't have needed drugs for a whole range of conditions. I wouldn't have needed anti-anxiety drugs. I wouldn't have needed antidepressants. You know, medicinal cannabis is not a drug. It is not a medicine. It is a plant with substances in it that are nutrients that we require at certain times to balance our body's endocannabinoid system. And the endocannabinoid system in our bodies is the system that regulates everything in our nervous system, in our immune system, in our liver, in our gut. It regulates, it is a messenger system that sends signals to all of our cells to behave themselves. It downregulates inflammation. It resolves it.
So just one sec, so get that really clear, because people go, how come we're talking about cannabinoids in medicinal cannabis and we're talking endocannabinoid systems inside us? So how come that happened?
Well, the endocannabinoid system has only been recently, when I say recently, in the last 20 plus years, discovered, but it's a system in our body where we actually have receptors on our cells, in our brain, our nervous system, spinal cord, on our immune cells, on our lymphocytes, white blood cells, killer cells. All of these have receptors for cannabinoids. Okay, cannabinoids, yes, are plants, things that the plant makes, that cannabis makes. But we also, our bodies produce cannabinoids, and these are called endocannabinoids. So our brain, for example, produces endocannabinoids. One is called anandamide, which means pleasure, and the other is 2-AG. It's a chemical name, but it basically, these are the endocannabinoids that our body makes. And our body makes them for particular reasons. It's to modulate the activity, regulate the activity of our brain and our nerves so that they don't overreact or they don't underreact. And it also modulates the activity of our immune system. Fascinating.
Fascinating. Ian, that is so, I love it. You know, I've been in my involvement with the hemp industry. I'm secretary of the Peak National Body, the Australian Industrial Hemp Alliance, that we also cover medicinal cannabis. But the pity is to call it medicinal cannabis because, as you say, it is a plant. And we're getting close to the end of this conversation because we're tight on time, but your explanation of that, so there are cannabinoids in the cannabis plant that our body needs and we use it through the endocannabinoid system in a whole range of ways. And dear listeners, I really want you to take an interest in this because we're not talking drugs or medicine. And you know, my next 10-minute, 15, 20-minute conversation with you, Ian, would be around the attempts by pharmaceutical companies to create isolates out of cannabis, because we can't possibly give the whole plant to a person. We have to isolate parts of it, take it out of context. And golly gosh, that's a whole conversation in itself. Ian, last question. Your story is wonderful. Your work is wonderful. I recommend people to find out about it. Cod liver oil. I urge people to go back to cod liver oil. The research that you've done in Turkey, you had to do in Turkey because you couldn't get it done in Australia. Is that correct?
That's correct. We didn't have enough patients in one place in Australia to do it. And the researchers in Turkey were very keen to do the study for us, looking at vitamin C, vitamin D, and zinc in prevention and treatment, and using hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin in treatment as well. And all have been shown to be of wonderful benefit in either preventing or treating patients with severe COVID. And in fact, those who were given intravenous vitamin C in intensive care came out of intensive care quicker than those who were not given the vitamin C in intensive care.
Beautiful example. Thank you for joining us, Professor Ian Brighthope, on Mind Medicine Program. It's a joy to have you. I congratulate you on your courageous journey, and I hope you continue it for another at least 30 years to come, Ian, because I'm going to be, you know my view around aging, and gosh, that's another conversation that we could have. Thanks for being with us. So, dear listeners, reminding you of what this program is about. It's about mental health. It's about health of all description. We run this program in association with Mind Medicine Australia, who've managed to get some approval for MDMA and psilocybin. And I've seen videos of the amazing transformation of people who have suffered for years, who have gone through treatment protocols, medically delivered, using these drugs has transformed their lives. People who have suffered from PTSD for 10, 15 years. Now, I'm Charles Kervis, Australasia's passion provocateur. You and your success in life is deeply linked to your passion and your health, because as Ian Brighthope says, how can you be healthy if your body is collapsing in front of you? And as Linda Wilson, our first guest in the first hour, said, pay attention to this amazing machine that God has given us, this amazing complexity. Pay attention to it and act accordingly. Thanks for being with us. I look forward to being with you in 2 weeks' time at 1 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Saving Time or 5 p.m. LA time. Thank you. Have a great weekend.